So I'm going to read first the verses preceding 1:3-2, starting from 1:2-8. I'll just read the English. Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya replied, "I accept that you do not understand, yet even one who does not understand inquires about the subject matter. You are hearing again and again, yet you keep silent. I cannot understand what is actually within your mind." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then revealed his mind, saying, "I can understand the meaning of each sutra very clearly, but your explanations have simply agitated my mind." There's a short purport. I'll just quickly read that. "The factual meaning of the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra is as clear as sunshine. The Mayavadi philosophers simply try to cover the sunshine with the clouds of interpretations imagined by Shankaracharya and his followers." 1:3-1. "The meaning of the aphorisms in the Vedanta Sutra contain clear purports in themselves, but other purports you presented simply covered the meaning of the sutras like a cloud." Prabhupada says here, "Please refer to Adi Leela, chapter 7, verses 106 to 146, for an explanation of this verse," which I shall not do at this point. "You do not explain." This is 1:3-2. So let's get your screen on, because you've got that there, haven't you? "You do not explain the direct meaning." Oh, I'll do the, shall I do the Bengali? I can't actually see it. Something's come up on the screen. Let me just go to my screen where I've got it. Translation. "You do not explain the direct meaning of the Brahma Sutras. Indeed, it appears that your business is to cover their real meaning." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. "This is typical of all Mayavadis or atheists who interpret the meaning of Vedic literature in their own imaginative way. The real purpose of such foolish people is to impose the impersonalist conclusion on all Vedic literature. The Mayavadi atheists also interpret the Bhagavad Gita. In every verse of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In every verse, Vyasadeva says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, or the Blessed Lord said. It is clearly stated that the Blessed Lord is the Supreme Person, but Mayavadi atheists still try to prove that the absolute truth is impersonal. In order to present their false imaginary meanings, they must adopt so much word jugglery and grammatical interpretation that they finally become ludicrous. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remarked that no one should hear the Mayavadi commentaries or purports to any Vedic literature." Hare Krishna. So I'm going to share my own screen now, given that this can be done. I just want to make sure that I need to do this in a certain way. I attempted to do this prior to the beginning of the class, but Kamal Prabhu... wait a minute. There should be a... There we go. Advanced. Right. Portion of screen. Share. Here we go. Yeah, so it looks like I've got it. That should be okay. Is that okay?
That's perfect like this, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, Prabhu. Can you take away the side box? Actually, it's fine. I'll probably be okay. So, I'm going to speak starting with 1:8 because I contemplated what might be the best kind of thing. I was thinking maybe to do a bit of Mayavadi bashing here because that's always good fun. But there's another point which struck me in connection with this episode of Lord Chaitanya and Sarvabhauma. And that is here in this verse, we find Sarvabhauma saying to Lord Chaitanya that "I accept you do not understand, yet even one who does not understand inquires about the subject matter." So from this I understand that you should not hear passively. That if you're hearing, you should be really trying to obviously understand the subject matter. And if you don't, then you should be making inquiries. That we should not be just hearing passively, and it goes in one ear and out the other. And, you know, perhaps it doesn't even make it in there. That's we're half asleep. But so not understanding something is fine. You know, here it's saying that's okay. But if you don't, then you should question. There's an old saying that better to be a fool for 5 minutes and ask a question than to remain one forever by not asking the question. So this is a very important point, I think, which I'd like to just speak a little bit about today. So the first question that comes up for me when I hear this and understand that I should not be hearing passively is, how can I do that when I'm reading? You know, if I'm, like, especially these days, we're on our own a lot. We're locked down. So is there some way that I can avoid this problem when I'm actually trying to study and read by myself? So I just wanted to run through this because I'm going to, you know, just demonstrate this a little bit as well as I go through other things that Srila Prabhupada has said about this. This is a four-step study process by which we can actually become active in the way we are hearing from Srila Prabhupada. So the first thing we should try to do when we see something, a point, as we go through Prabhupada's books, which I hope you're all doing regularly, we encounter points. So that it may be one sentence, two sentences, or a whole paragraph. But we see that Srila Prabhupada is making a point. So paraphrase that. Capture his meaning. Put it in your own words. Srila Prabhupada actually said this, that we should paraphrase his purports in our own words, so that you know, we're not just repeating them word for word. But if in order to be able to present things in your own words, you have to first assimilate and understand it. So do that, and then, you know, make sure you're capturing the right meaning with an open mind. Like in this episode here, we're hearing about Lord Chaitanya, how the Mayavadis impose their own meaning. They're not coming to Shastra open-minded. They're coming to it with their preconceived ideas. They've got a position that they want to adhere, you know, stick to, and that is that we're all one. You know, we all know what the Mayavadi philosophy is, that God is ultimately not a person. So with that fixed understanding, they approach Shastra, and thus they can't, you know, really get the right meaning, the right understanding. They just have to twist it and interpret it. And Srila Prabhupada really makes the point that we must understand. If you look, for example, in the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, in the very first purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how we should be trying to understand the Gita. And that is, you know, without personally motivated interpretations. So there's a whole process that, if you look on the bottom of this screen, there's a website where I have put up many points about this, how we can do this in more detail. But I'm just briefly going through this now. So first, understand Srila Prabhupada's meaning. Put aside any responses we may have, because when we hear something, the first thing we may think is, oh, that's a good point, or that's, you know, oh, that doesn't make any sense, or whatever, you know. But these are our responses, which are assuming that we've understood what he's saying in the first place. So first make sure we really are understanding. So do that. Now, the next point, the next step, do I have any doubts or confusion? So having understood Srila Prabhupada's point, does it bring up for me any doubts? Oh, that contradicts something else that I read somewhere in a different place. It confuses me in this way or that way. So that may be something that we need to, you know, address. And it's very important that we do that, because doubts are something which will remain and, you know, fester in the heart. So this is a very good process to bring those out, so that at some point in the future, when we come across very trying and testing and difficult situations, those doubts won't explode and shatter our faith completely. So the process we should be going through as we study Prabhupada's books is confronting our doubts as soon as possible, our confusions, and tackling those and addressing those. This is best done, actually, with other devotees, in the association of other devotees, because, you know, we reveal our doubts to other devotees. We speak together and discuss it, and then we help each other to really, you know, to tackle those doubts. Another devotee may have already done that and overcome them, and so we can help each other in that kind of way. But even on our own, we can do that. We can write down those doubts and confusions and then research in Prabhupada's books to try to address them. The third step, do I have any insights? So when we're reading Srila Prabhupada's books, they give us realizations and insights. So write those down as well as you're going through the books. And the final step is, and always support everything with Shastra. You know, don't come up with something which is, you know, oh, this makes me think of, you know, so many things, and we go off on flights of our own imaginative fancy. Always ensure that everything we're saying is supported by Shastra, and we can back that up. So the final point is, so what? What should I do? So in other words, Srila Prabhupada is not, you know, he's telling us things for a purpose. So we should be asking that question, why does Prabhupada want me to know this? What does he want me to do? Why is he telling me this? You know, what should I maybe just think? He's trying to maybe rectify my thought process, or he may be asking me to take some positive action, tangible action. So, you know, we ask that question, am I doing this already? He's asking me to do something. If I'm not, what is the gap between what he wants me to do and what I'm doing? And how can I close that gap? So this is a very brief explanation of a simple process by which I've found that you can go very deeply into Prabhupada's books and mine out some wonderful understandings, wonderful truths that are there. Sometimes we read and we pass over these things because Prabhupada is a self-realized soul. He's a prema bhakta, and so there's some very profound meanings, you know, locked up in his books that we don't always capture. But when we go through them deeply, we try to understand them, then they come out, and we get some wonderful realizations. So let me move on to the next screen. So yes, the importance of inquiry. Which in the beginning there, Sarvabhaum was saying, why aren't you asking questions? This is actually the test of a disciple. This is a section from the Nectar of Instruction. One should not accept a spiritual master without following his instructions. Nor should one accept a spiritual master just to make a fashionable show of spiritual life. One must be jigyasu, very much inquisitive to learn from the bona fide spiritual master. The inquiries one makes should strictly pertain to transcendental science. Jigyasu Sreya Uttamam. The word Uttamam refers to that which is above material knowledge. Tama means the darkness of this material world, and Ut means transcendental. Generally, people are very interested in inquiring about mundane subject matters. But when one has lost such interest and is simply interested in transcendental subject matters, he is quite fit for being initiated. So there's some really good points here. One should not accept a spiritual master without following his instructions. So obviously, Prabhupada actually writes that if one takes diksha but doesn't follow the shiksha, the instructions, he's still considered fallen. So this is an important point. And just to make a fashionable show of spiritual life, so yeah, we shouldn't be initiated. I understand that means that, that you know, we can now, you know, say I'm a disciple of this one and make a very big deal out of it, but not actually be very serious in terms of following. So one must be jigyasu, very much inquisitive to learn from the bona fide spiritual master. So jigyasu means inquisitive. And this is the qualification of the disciple. There should be mutual testing between guru and disciple. So there are many qualifications one looks for in the guru. I'm not going to get into that. But the guru looks for one qualification in the disciple. This. Is he jigyasu? Is he inquisitive? And the inquiries one makes should strictly pertain to transcendental science. So jigyasu shreya uttamam. So this is, he has to see, is this person, you know, sometimes people ask spiritual masters questions about how they can improve their material life. That's not jigyasu. That's, you know, that's not the business of the spiritual master. The inquiry should strictly pertain to the transcendental science. So here, Prabhupada makes that point, that generally people are very interested in inquiring about mundane subject matters. But when one has lost such interest and is simply interested in transcendental subject matters, he is fit for being initiated. So this is the real qualification and the test of a disciple, that he wants to know what is in my ultimate best interests, not, you know, what is some temporary solution to a problem that probably someone else could solve. Spiritual master gives us the permanent solution to our problems. And Prabhupada says, is simply interested. So that, I understand, means he has no other interests. It's not that I'm still concerned about anything in this material world. How can I improve my situation in this world? How can I get wealth, followers, name, fame, adoration, anything? You're not interested in that anymore. In one place, Prabhupada says that, you know, we should be disgusted with those things, that we really are so disinterested. But we're very interested in the transcendental subject matters. So this brings up for me another question, which relates to what I was saying earlier, that, you know, we may be on our own in terms of trying to study, trying to make advancement. Often we may find that. So how can I inquire if my guru is not present or if I don't have much access to him? It raises that question, that doubt for me, that your spiritual master may have, wound up his earthly pastimes and become no longer present, as of course with Srila Prabhupada and some others these days. Or you just may not be able to have much time to really communicate with him. So what can we do about that? So now here's a nice quotation from the fourth canto. When the Brahmin asked the woman who the man lying on the floor was, she answered that he was her spiritual master and that she was perplexed about what to do in his absence. At such a time, the super soul immediately appears, provided the devotee is purified in heart by following the directions of the spiritual master. A sincere devotee who follows the instructions of the spiritual master certainly gets direct instructions from the heart, from his heart through the super soul. Thus, a sincere devotee is always helped directly or indirectly by the spiritual master and the super soul. This is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Guru Krishna Prasad Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. So there's some wonderful instructions in this section. This is, of course, the end of the Paranjan pastimes. Paranjan becomes a woman in his next life, and this is the woman. Then she marries the husband who represents the Acharya, actually, and the guru. But he dies, so then she's left on her own. So the Brahmin has come to speak to her, I think it's Yamaraj, and then he asks her, she was perplexed to do so. At that time, the super soul immediately appears. Okay, so provided the devotee is purified enough. So this raises for me the question, well, what does that mean? Does the super soul, you know, come and stand in front of me? Or, you know, do I have a vision of him suddenly in my heart? So that's one question. And then, provided the devotee is purified in heart by following the directions of the spiritual master. Okay, so what directions should I be following in order to get that purification so that the super soul will appear before me? So this sentence raises questions like that. These are, you know, if I was going through, I'd be asking myself. And a sincere devotee who follows the instruction of the spiritual master certainly gets direct instructions from the heart, from the super soul. So here's the answer to one question. It's not necessarily that I'm going to see the super soul in all his splendor with his forearms and, you know, but I'm going to get direct instructions in the heart from the super soul. So that would raise another question. Well, how do I know that they're instructions from the super soul? You know, I so many things all the time. My mind is continuously telling me things. Do this, do that, you know, don't do that. So how can I distinguish what are these direct instructions? Okay, I have to be sincere and I have to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. I'm learning that from this sentence. And then I'll get the instructions. So what does sincere mean? Sincere means jigyasu shreya uttama, as we were just saying, that I actually want to solve the problems of my life. I don't want any more to, you know, languish in this material world, wasting my time with useless things that are simply going to lead me to misery. Anything that I try to enjoy in this world is always going to end in suffering. So I don't want that. That's sincerity. I'm jigyasu shreya uttama, following the instructions. So what are they? Of course, there are many, but I'm going to speak a little bit about that in a second. Thus, a sincere devotee is always helped directly and indirectly by the spiritual master. So the spiritual master is the external manifestation, of course, of the super soul. We are instructed by the spiritual master externally and the super soul internally. And when the spiritual master departs, we're left with the super soul. And of course, sadhus. We can also take shiksha from sadhus, guru sadhu shastra. So this also is an answer to the question, how do I know if I'm being directed by the super soul and not by my crazy mind? Because I can get confirmation from sadhus and from shastra. Always we should be consulting shastra. So following the directions of the spiritual. So what are the directions I must follow to connect with the super soul? So I'm going to look at this verse now from the Bhagavad Gita. In the 10th chapter, Krishna tells us, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. So to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So this is buddhi yoga. Buddhi yoga, Prabhupada says, is the transcendental quality of the work we perform. Because, you know, we can be doing so many things, and we may be even thinking, I'm following the instructions of the guru, I'm working very hard, you know, going out, doing this, doing that. But is it buddhi yoga? Or is it karma? I mean, if we are motivated by some desire, like, for instance, I'm a writer, and I'm write books and articles and things. So if I'm thinking, ha, people will think, what a great author I am, you know, how learned and how many, you know, he's, you know, what a great literary person. my endeavors are useless. They're just mundane and material, and they're going to lead me to material entanglement and suffering. So buddhi yoga, how do we get that transcendental quality to our work and get this understanding, get this connection with the super soul. In the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, actually in the second chapter, There's some very nice verses. Shrinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Sravana Kirtana Pradyantak Stohya Bhadrani. So we're told there that we should be by the process of Krishna Kata, of hearing and chanting about Krishna, the heart, the impurities in the heart are removed. So we want to remove those impurities because they are covering the super soul, our ability to hear from Krishna. So this is confirmed in the next verse that the that here he's talking about giving us the understanding from within the heart as the super soul, because he says in the next verse, to show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So this follows from the previous verse that, you know, I give the understanding by which they can come to me, the Buddha Yoga. So he's doing that as the super soul from within the heart, destroying the darkness born of ignorance. So what is it we have to do primarily? I've gone back a couple of verses. This is 10.9, which comes before 10.10, of course. But the significance of that is this, that he's saying, Machita makata prana bodayanta parasparam katayantashtamam nityam tushanticharam antichar. So the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So the significance of this to me, I understand that, you know, Krishna is telling us this, and then he's telling us in the next verse that to those who are constantly devoted, I give the understanding. And he's just told us what that devotion looks like in verse 9, that we are bodhayanta parasparam, that we're always enlightening one another, conversing together about Krishna, that we're discussing and coming together and, you know, Krishna Katha, enlightening one another, which is what I was saying earlier, that, you know, there is this process by which we can do that. Sadly, so many times when we discuss philosophy, we debate. You know, we come at it with like a position that we're greatly attached to for some reasons. And we just defend it, you know, in the course of the discussion, so-called, with the other devotees, we're simply putting forward our point. There are different kinds of discussion. You know, there's Jalpa, Vitanda, and Vada. And the Vada discussion is the one which aims to get to the truth. It's not a question of who is right, but what is right. You know, it's not a question of... you know, we have to open our minds. This is the thing about transcendental knowledge, that in order to receive that, we have to be like a blank slate and put aside our prejudice, our assumptions, what we think we know. Sometimes we think we know things about Krishna conscious philosophy, but then we discover when we go deeply into it and we discuss with other devotees with an open mind that some of our cherished assumptions were wrong, you know. So, bodhayanta parasparam, katayantashtamam nityam, tushanticharam antichar. How do we know that the process of bodhayanta parasparam is actually working and that we're getting this enlightenment? Because we derive great satisfaction and bliss. It's not that we become frustrated and angry, oh, you fool, you know, you're completely wrong. we were never in the spiritual world. Oh, you know, the earth is flat, or ladies should never give initiation. You know, we've got these different cherished ideas in our head that we fight for. And then, you know, in the course of the discussion, all we become is angry and frustrated. Then something's going wrong. But if we're feeling this, you know, tashanticara manticara, it's working. The process is working. So, you know, we should be aiming for that. And getting that, because that's what we want. That's what, you know, that's really what we're seeking, actually. That's our jigyasa, that's Shreya Uttama. What is the Shreya Uttama? The great satisfaction and bliss of Krishna consciousness. So this is the process that really we should be getting together. And these are the instructions, I understand, the primary instructions that we have to follow. What earlier I was saying that, you know, one who follows the directions of the spiritual master connects with the super soul and gets that, you know, that guidance from within his heart. He's enlightened and his work becomes Buddha yoga. His work becomes transcendental, comes off the mundane platform. And he's feeling always happy, always enlivened, always blissful. And if we're not feeling that, then we have to think, okay, let me review this situation here. What am I doing wrong? You know, if I'm feeling frustrated, if I'm feeling tortured, pressured, anxious, that shouldn't be the case. As devotees, we should be feeling this bliss, satisfaction, peace, joy, you know. So these are the key instructions. There are many things, of course, we can do in Krishna consciousness. The nine limbs to bhakti, as we know. And Shravanam Kirtanam is the first. But Shravanam Kirtanam is the basis. Out of that comes everything else. We hear, the first thing we do is hear, and that inspires us and we chant. So that should be a constant underlying feature of our devotional service. It's not that, well, I move on from one, I did that, and now, you know, I'm on to the next level. No, we're constantly hearing and chanting. You know, this is the process that, you know, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love. All right, so let's move on. So my question, how we can inquire in the guru's absence is answered here. If there is no chance to serve the spiritual master directly, a devotee should serve him by remembering his instructions. Oops, sorry. There is no difference between the spiritual master's instructions and the spiritual master himself. In his absence, therefore, his words of direction should be the pride of the disciple. So in the absence of the spiritual master, his vani is there, and we must take shelter of his vani constantly. You know, we have this opportunity. It's incredible that Prabhupada has given us these wonderful books full of so much instructions, sublime, wonderful instructions that we can access, that is there present. And it's, we're associating with, you know, with Sadhu, with Guru and Shastra at the same time, because he's provided us with these purports. So if we have inquiries, this is how we can answer them. If we know the process, you know, that as I say, we're not using the books to bash someone over the head with them, you know, or to just fight and argue, debate. Prabhupada says Krishna consciousness is not a debate club. That's not, you know, that's not what we're trying to do. So we can answer our questions. Once Srila Prabhupada said, everything is in my books. All your questions are answered. So, but we have to know the process, how we can extract those answers from the books. We have to become expert miners, that we can mine out those instructions, and then how to apply them. And it's very simple in this. If we come together, devotees come together, vadayanta parasparam, and we discuss these things nicely and hear and chant. Here Srila Prabhupada makes this point. Everything is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. So never mind anything else, just the Gita. It's all there. And therefore, to learn how to become free from the miserable condition of material existence, Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study. So, then if one understands Bhagavad Gita, one can proceed to Srimad Bhagavatam, and if one advances further, one may study Chaitanya Charitamrita. We are therefore presenting these invaluable books to the world so that people may study them and be happy, being delivered from miserable conditional life. So I understand here, Srila Prabhupada is saying that people may study them and be happy, being delivered from miserable conditional life. So he's telling us here that his books have that potency, that by studying his books, we can be delivered from our misery, from our suffering in this material world. So, you know, this is what we should be experiencing. As we approach Srila Prabhupada through his Vani and study his books, then we should be feeling ourselves being delivered from the misery of material conditional life. Not that, we're always feeling this, as I said previously, always feeling this anxiety and struggle in material life. Here is the process that Prabhupada is giving us. And we should start. And another important point is the systematic nature of this, the requirement that we do this in a systematic way. Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study. So, this should be taken seriously. And we must, first of all, like Bhagavad Gita takes us to the point of Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param, to Brahma Bhuta, Prashanatmana Sarjati Nakankshati. So when are we ready to move on from the Bhagavad Gita? When we are Nasarjati Nakankshati, when we're no longer lamenting, and we're not hankering. And samaksaraveshu bhuteshu. We're seeing all living entities equally, that we are able to, we don't have those prejudices. We don't have those hates and dislikes for anyone. We see them the same, that they're all parts of Krishna, like us. We are free of the bodily conception of life, Brahma Bhuta, that we no longer identify with our material body. We no longer think, I am this body, I am a man, I'm a woman, I'm old, young, black, white, whatever. All of these things now, we don't identify with those. This is where the Gita takes us, to that point. And free of hankering. We're not wanting anything. We're completely peaceful. And we're not lamenting for anything. You know, it doesn't matter what happens to us in our material life. We're not lamenting. What does that mean? We're not lamenting. We remain fixed in doing our duty. We remain fixed in serving Srila Prabhupada, serving our spiritual master, engaging in the process of Krishna consciousness. Lamentation means, like Arjuna at the beginning of the Gita, he was lamenting. So what was the symptom of that lamentation? He didn't want to do his duty. He dropped his bow. He sat down. He said, I can't go on. I can't do this. So that's what lamentation does to us. So we're free of that. So, when we're at that point, Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param, then begins real bhakti. So if we haven't reached that point, and I can say for a fact that I haven't reached that point, then we must still be associating with the Bhagavad Gita regularly. And Prabhupada actually structured it in for us like that, in the day. In the morning, Srimad Bhagavatam. In the evening, Bhagavad Gita. This is the ISKCON sandwich. Quite often that becomes the open sandwich. And the evening program is missed. But they both should be there. And they can be there. It's not that difficult. Of course, in the temple, you have ample opportunity, that it's going on as a part of the program. Don't neglect it. Don't neglect that. Don't think, Gita is like, I'm past that. I've been around for 5 years now and I don't need this basic stuff any longer. We do need it. And if you're not in the temple and you're at home, and I presume a few people at home are listening to this, then you should structure it into your day. Every morning, as I said previously, and every evening, I put aside time to discuss with my wife and perhaps sometimes other people if they're around, my children, not very often, but not as often as I'd like. But certainly with my wife, and especially now because we're locked down, it's just me and her. So, we discuss with those, based on those principles, which you'll find on that website, improvingsangha.com. I recommend have a quick look at that. There's so many quotations from Srila Prabhupada explaining how we can, unlock, how we can mine his books and bring out those wonderful instructions and get the benefit. Like the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, Bhagavatam in the Gita, we can do that side by side because Prabhupada set that up. But the Bhagavatam also, we should go through that step by step. Canto 1, Canto 2. The second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada writes in one verse that by the time you reach the end of the second canto, you should be free of sex life. you know, and if you're not, then you shouldn't proceed further. He actually says that. I haven't quoted that purport, but you can find it. I think it's 2:10, 12, I forget exactly where it is, but he does say that. So I don't think he meant that you can't read the rest of the Bhagavatam, but the way I understand that is that you should still be studying the second canto and the first canto if you're not free of that inclination, of that desire. You know, so this is the systematic nature of study. And by the ninth canto, the end of the ninth canto, he says you should be a God-realized soul. So, you know, just reading it by ourselves, and I think probably a lot of us have already done that. We may have read all the books. Are we a self-realized soul? Okay, let's go back a step. Are we free of sex life? Well, okay. Let's go back another step to the Bhagavad Gita. Am I free of sociality and consciousness? Am I samaksaravesha bhuteshu? I don't think I can tick any of those boxes. So I need to be associating with the Gita and the Bhagavatam regularly, every single day. And not just hearing them. This is the last, I'll just end after this. To hear and explain them is more important than reading them. One can assimilate the knowledge of the revealed scriptures only by hearing and explaining. Hearing is called shravan, and explaining is called kirtan. These two processes of shravan and kirtan are of primary importance to progressive spiritual life. Only one who has properly grasped the transcendental knowledge from the right source by submissive hearing can properly explain the subject. So, I mean, so much here. Submissive hearing, again, open-minded, putting aside my prejudices, my assumptions, bracket those, and just try to hear and let it come in and understand it, and, you know, in your own words. So in your own words, I understand this, to explain them. So when we come together with other devotees, we hear, and then we repeat in our own words, and then the other devotee can reflect that back to us to help us, you know, deepen our own understanding that will enable us to go further into it. That way we can assimilate the knowledge. So not just passive hearing, as I began by saying, not just sit there hearing, saying nothing, understanding nothing, but, you know, repeat what you heard, and then you will assimilate. And this is of primary importance to progressive spiritual life. So, 8:25, these are the few points that I tried to make today. Passive hearing is not sufficient. We must make inquiries, jigyasu, shreya uttama. We must be interested only in spiritual advancement. That equals to sincerity. And we can inquire through the process of hearing and discussing from Srila Prabhupada, no less. All the answers are there in his books. And we do that process, that's hearing and chanting, that's sankirtan. Sankirtan doesn't just mean going out to sell books. It does mean that. But it actually means the congregational glorification of Krishna. So we can do that with just two of us, sit down and discuss the books and repeat them in our own words. And we're preaching to each other. We're enlightening one another. The whole process is there. You know, 2, 3, 4 of you, you can do it like that. So when we do that, we get the Buddha Yoga, the intelligence from Krishna. And then all our work comes to the transcendental platform. And in that way, of course, we're associating with the spiritual master. He's present in those instructions. So I think I've reached the moment when questions are invited. If anybody has any, I don't know if Kamal Prabhu's got anything in the chat box.
Thank you so much. This was really enlivening to hear you speak about this very important topic. You took us on a big journey from Shravanam and essentially to Kirtanam, like through all these stages. And I really appreciated the points. So important to keep on hearing this, that we actually not only passively do anything basically, but especially hearing. I think that's what you stressed today. Very nice.
Thank you, Prabhu.
So we have one question right now. Maybe there will come some more afterwards. Hare Krishna, you want to pose them yourself? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, it's very, very nice in the light, like, you know, your class is very good, you know, it's very inspiring. I just have one question, like, you know, if somebody just read like Bhagavad Gita, they can still come to the Krishna consciousness or hearing, and it's also very important. Without hearing, they can still come only just reading.
Okay. So I understand you're saying, can we become Krishna conscious simply by reading the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah. Or do we need to hear? You're saying, do we need to hear from a person particularly? I understand that's what you mean. Or can we just read the Gita?
Yes.
Did I understand you?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Reading the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita certainly has the potency to liberate us. But this was the point I was really trying to make here, that how can we achieve that? How do we get that result? And I think training is needed, some training in order to really do that. You know, you can pick up the Gita and read it yourself, and you'll certainly get the benefit from doing that. And I highly recommend you do that. But as well as that, to go more deeply into it and to really unlock the potency of the Gita, there's one verse in the ninth chapter where should I bring it up on the screen? I'm just going to see if I can find it, where Srila Prabhupada actually addresses this point. Sorry, the screen's been a bit funky, but chapter 9, I think it's verse 1. It might be 2. Let's see. Prabhupada says, a discussion of Krishna is very potent, and if a fortunate person has such association and tries to assimilate the knowledge, Prabhupada says, then he will surely make advancement towards spiritual realization. So discussion of Krishna is very potent. I think this is the main point, that that we discuss them, we discuss the books, that we don't just read it by ourselves, but we try to find like-minded partners. And, we're very fortunate that we have now the technology by which, even if we can't be in the same room together, we can do it via this process here. And, like technology using Zoom or Skype or whatever, and we can discuss together. And I would recommend that you have a look at the website of improvingsangha.com, which will show you principles, how to do this discussion process, and some tips. And myself and my good wife Chintamani Dham, are always happy to assist in coaching people in this process, so that they can discuss together and go more deeply into the books. So my answer to you is yes, you can make advancement with just the Gita, but really you need the help of other devotees to really get the full benefit.
Thank you, Prabhupada.
I hope that helps. Hare Krishna.
So, Prabhuji, how can you get your contact?
Yes, you can find me on my website, krishnadharma.com, or improvingsangha.com. There's also a contact button there. You can reach us through that.
Okay, thank you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, there's one more question on the chat.
Okay.
From Mataji. She asks, is there anything that's being too inquisitive, and can that be a problem in spiritual growth? Or should we just keep cultivating our genuinely inquisitive nature despite a certain ideal of being chaste and reserved?
Okay. So you're saying, is there a problem if you're too inquisitive? You may be chaste and reserved in your nature, but should you nevertheless cultivate an inquisitive, become inquisitive? Despite that fact, not be shy about it or anything like that. That's what I understood. I hope I got it right. And as far as being too inquisitive is concerned, you can't be too inquisitive to ask questions about the right thing, but you must do that. Like, in some classes, like Srila Prabhupada, people would ask him a question off topic, and Prabhupada wouldn't answer it. He would dismiss it. He would say, please ask about the subject matter under discussion and not go off on a tangent, you know, because that can happen. Keep focused. And that's one thing about the process I'm talking about here, which we teach, that it really enables you to stay focused on the point that Prabhupada's making and not, you know, go off on a dissertation of the whole Krishna conscious philosophy, because one thing leads to another. So, you know, it's important to really have laser-like focus on each point and bring it out. So inquiries, yes, keep inquiring. And inquiries really mean doubts, that I have a doubt. So you ask that. So when a doubt arises, you should try to phrase that as a question. You know, and as I was trying to demonstrate earlier, ask the question and then try to answer it, either in discussion with others or through your own research. So just make sure that the queries are relating to Krishna consciousness, obviously, and to the subject that you're trying to really understand. I think, you know, for anyone, it doesn't matter who you are, that's fine. You don't have to be shy about that. You can be, you know, fully inquisitive, and Prabhupada always encouraged that, and I'm sure your own spiritual masters do so as well. Any other questions?
Prabhuji, I just have one question, if it's okay.
Yes, of course it is.
You know, you are saying that without, like, if I take initiation, but I cannot, like, just in case, like, you know, if I have initiation, but I cannot constantly know about, like, my spiritual guru context. So I can just read his instruction and follow up like that without, like, you know.
So you're saying you may have a spiritual master, but you're
not. I don't have spiritual master right now, but it's just after initiation. But because spiritual masters have lots of other devotees as well, so they don't have time to give individual. So how can we, like, you know, follow up with them?
Yes, this is true. So you're saying if you do take initiation, or if you have a spiritual master, but you're not able to access him, how can you, go forward? I mean, that is something I was trying to also address. It is indeed a problem. But you can read his books if he has them, but certainly Prabhupada's books are fundamental to ISKCON. He's the foundational Shiksha Guru, we're told by the GBC. So, and his instructions form the basis. His books are the basis, obviously. So take shelter of those, and take shelter of them with other devotees. I don't really want to get into this discussion about spiritual masters, but I'll leave it for now. But certainly, Prabhupada's books are the way by which you can make progress. And as I was trying to explain, answer your questions and doubts, and basically everything. And it may be sometimes, like, while I'm discussing it, sometimes I come across a question that I can't answer. Neither of us can answer. So we write those down. And then we look for other devotees whom we feel may be able to help us, who have a deeper knowledge of Shastra or whatever. And then you can ask those later. But we find that 95% of our doubts, questions, confusions are cleared up by discussing Prabhupada's books together. So that's what I would recommend.
So Prabhupada's book is very important to read, and you can get answer. Okay. Thank you.
Do you want to carry on, Kamal, or are you running out of time?
I think there's no more questions here, and yeah, we're almost there. So
we don't get cut off mid-flow.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Come to a natural end.
Thank you.
It was really enlightening and inspiring, and we will try to apply it to become experts in mining the minds of the books of Srila Prabhupada. And on behalf of ISKCON, Bhaktivedanta Manor and the School of Bhakti, thank you very much, and we hope to have you back soon, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare.